John.
George.
It's an honor to talk to you, sir. How are you?
Bad.
Bad, I know. To the bone.
John and George. Now, there's two good rock and roll names.
I'm telling you, yeah. They've made some history, haven't they?
They sure have.
Well, Mr. George Thorogood bringing his rock party tour with the Destroyers to Ruth Eckerd Hall. That's coming right up. Thursday, May 18th at Ruth Eckerd Hall. I'll be there to bring you on.
Well, I'll be looking forward to that. Always a trip to go to Florida, FLA. We always call Florida, I think they shouldn't call it the Sunshine State. I think they should call it the Party State.
Well, it is that. That is true, man. It's
well, that's what you specialize in your state. You know, things of that nature. And you have two Major League Baseball teams, a couple of football teams. It's an entertainment state, is what I'm trying to say.
It is that. Well, George, I know you mentioned baseball. You and I've got something in common. We played some baseball in our younger days. Are you kind of happy that didn't work out?
Let me ask you something. How many rock and roll stars say I'd rather be a baseball player? How many baseball players say I'd rather be a rock star?
Well, that's a good point.
Okay, forget about that.
Well, George,
all these baseball players—they all have tattoos, long hair, and earrings.
Right.
They look like rock stars, and the rock stars look like ball players.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Well, George, you're 40-some years into this rock and roll business. Apparently, you guys are still having fun.
Well, we always have a saying, and Bill Blau came up with this years ago, when the fun stops, it stops.
Yeah. Well, tell us now, you know, your first paying gig, I understand, was when you were 15 and you played for your twin sister. How did that come about?
Well, it was a band up the street. I had just got a guitar for Christmas present and an amp. I didn't know how to play it at all, but I knew a guy who was in a band, and they said they were looking for a lead singer. They were looking for a singer, and this kid who was in the band said, well, George Thorogood lives right down the street, and he knows the words to a lot of songs. They invited me up to there to kind of do a semi-audition. I knew the words to lots and lots of songs. I don't know how good I could sing them.
Yeah.
But their repertoire kind of doubled when I got there. So I sang with them every day for, you know, a couple of weeks. And then they said, well, we'd like to do some gigs. And I said, I think I know where I can get us a gig. And I knew my sisters were having a party coming up, a birthday party, like something like that. And so I just mentioned it two of the guys in the band, and one of the guys in the band was a pretty big hustler, so he got on the phone with my mother, and they got to talking, and my mother thought it was a really wonderful idea, and, you know, one thing led to another, and bang, there we were playing, so, but to me, it was just a gig, you know, I didn't sing or perform like a professional for day one, but I sure had the mindset of one. So
right.
When I walked in there, they were like all strangers to me, because it was all business to me.
Right.
Which at that point, my parents were said, well, this is obviously what this kid's cut out for.
Yeah.
If he stays it long enough, eventually the talent or whatever to make this thing happen, that'll catch up to him.
But, right.
You can see the look in his eye that this is what he was made to do. So,
well, any of us that grew up in the 60s, you know, were mesmerized when we saw, you know, Beatles, Hendrix, or Stones on the television, but... You know, I found a different inspiration as well for the blues. You found it from blues guitarist Hound Dog Taylor and others. Do you remember that specific moment where you went, wow, there's something about this blues thing I dig?
Yeah, the Rolling Stones were a blues band before they put out Satisfaction.
Right.
They were always talking about rhythm and blues, and they were my favorite band. So quite naturally, I said, well, I like this sound that they did, and I read a lot of interviews by them, read a book by them, and they brought Howling Wolf on television on Shindig, and I saw that. And I started to gravitate towards the artists that Brian Jones and Keith Richards were very excited about, Bo Diddley and Howling Wolf and people like that. So quite naturally, I got into Chuck Berry and Muddy Waters. And I found out I was just as enthusiastic about them as I was about the Rolling Stones. So I wanted to play the guitar like Keith Richards. I wanted to perform like Mick Jagger, and I wanted to look like Brian Jones. Yeah, who wouldn't, right?
Right, at that time, so, of course.
Yes, exactly. So I said, well, the way to that road to that thing is you got to check out this blues stuff. So it was more like a technical schooling thing than it was a passion. You know, when I did see Hound Dog Taylor, I said, that's it. That's what I should be doing, playing with a trio, not performing alone, getting electric guitar and doing what he's doing.
Well, and two of your guys, your drummer Jeff Simon and Billy Blau on bass, they've been with you since the 70s. You guys must get along okay.
Well, you know, I sometimes question their sanity or their loyalty. I don't know which is stronger. You'll have to talk to them.
Right. Maybe that'll be our next interview, right? Well, George, I've always been curious. Where did you get the nickname Lonesome George? Where's that come from?
There was some. Actually, the guy who wanted me to come sing in the band, who's doing an audition to sing in the band, gave me that nickname because of. He was kind of a playboy kind of guy, and always had girls around him, and I never did. He used to tease me all the time and say, "There goes Lonesome George," because I never had any girls. And I did, so somehow it just stuck.
It all seems to flow together. I always like to announce when you're coming to town, hey, it's Lonesome George and the Delaware Destroyers coming to town. And that's who we're talking to, by the way. George Thorogood, the Rock Party Tour, coming to Ruth Eckert Hall Thursday, May 18th. Now, who comes up with tour names? I mean, ZZ Top always has some random names. And Rock Party Tour, that's a good one. But who comes up with those tour names?
Well, we usually get a whole list there. We start thinking of what we're... I know I don't. I certainly didn't think of the title Badder Than Ever. I didn't ever care for that.
Right.
But, that's beyond my control sometimes. And then the promoters like to have something they can hook on to, and the publicist thinks of it. You know, I have just generally thrown in the towel and say, well, you know more about it than I do. But when the Rock Party thing, I said, well, that's what we are, aren't we,
John? Yeah, makes sense.
And that's what the Destroyers are. I mean, it's just a natural fit. So if someone said, what are George Thorogood and the Destroyers? They're an American-made rock party.
Yeah.
We're not a mystery, you know.
No. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, I've had people come and see us play and they'll scratch and say, I don't get it. I said, well, you're not supposed to get the plot of the Three Stooges.
That's perfect. Oh, it's been, God, it's been at least, 25 years since I've seen you perform, so... I'm looking forward to that Thursday night, May 18th, again at Ruth Eckert Hall. George, I got to ask you, you mentioned your love for the Rolling Stones in the early days and probably still. What was that phone call like? Or do you remember exactly when they asked you to open up for them for the Tattoo Tour in 1981? How was that?
They didn't. I was 100% instrumental in that.
Oh, you initiated that?
Oh, yeah, everybody does. You know, When something like that is open, unless it's a rare case, Eric Clapton calls Jimmy Vaughan or Gary Clark Jr., but generally when one of the big superstar bands go on the road, everybody, puts in a pitch to want to be on. It's like saying, well, Marlon Brando's making a movie, and everybody goes, well, I want to be in it.
Well, of course. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yes. So I was proactive in that thing all the way. I mean, I wouldn't let our booking agent rest until he made Bill Graham's life miserable.
Yeah.
So I only wanted one gig, and we did get one gig, and from that, there was like another one added, just like any other rookie.
Sure.
You get a couple of hits in the lineup, they put you in the next day.
Right. Well, let me rephrase the question then. Okay, what was it like that first show opening up for the Stones?
It was really, we took it for what it was. It was over 100,000 people, and I think our biggest audience at that time might have been, we've done a couple of festivals where it was like 10,000 or something, but that was rare for us. We used to play small clubs. So we just took it for what it was. We just went out there and had a lot of fun. It was like 11:35 in the morning. We plugged in, ripped it up for about 35, 40 minutes. Bill Graham kept sending us back out. And we did. We kept playing everything. I think we did about five different versions of Johnny Be Good. And, how that goes.
Yeah.
but we were just doing it for what it was, just had a lot of fun figuring it was just going to be today and today only. And on top of it, before I even went on, I got to meet three of the Rolling Stones before we went on. So that was a real rush. I got to meet the Rolling Stones before I ever saw them play. So
wow.
That was a real thrill. So all it was a great day. I never thought I'd be asked again. I mean, I was off the stage tallying off, and Bill Graham was already in our face. What are you doing tomorrow?
That was cool.
It just went like that almost every day.
Well, George Thorogood and the Destroyers coming to Ruth Eckert Hall May 18th. I'm looking forward to seeing you then, George, and safe travels to you in the meantime.
Rock and roll never sleeps, it just passes out.